Wendy? Yes, Lisa. Is the water warm enough? Yes, Lisa. Shall we begin?
Hi, I'm Brian from Olathe, Kansas, and you're listening to WGXC Akron 90.7 FM.
Moments before he's hit with a 40-foot wall of sulfuric acid that will horribly burn everything in its path. Now, that's real acid, so I want to see goggles, people.
My eyes, the goggles do nothing.
It's almost always safety first at the Thingularity Radio program, so don't let that happen to you. Have your questions answered by sending them to catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com and tune in every first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM Acra or anytime at WGXC.org.
WGXC underwriting is provided in part by The Highway Drive-In, a four-screen drive-in movie theater in Coxsackie, New York. Information and schedule at HIWAYDriveIn.com.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Timothy Simmons of Brooklyn, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, December 5th. Local early morning temperatures range from negative 7 degrees in Medusa to 4 in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 38 degrees. To the west, Bovina Center picked up an inch of snow. And folks, this morning, just keep those pajamas on. Get dressed over them. Temperatures make it all the way up to 25 degrees by 3 p.m. Winds shouldn't be that bad and the sun will be out, but that's not really going to make up for it. Just stay inside today, folks. Overnight, temperatures dip to a now downright merciful 19 degrees. Tomorrow will be a bit cloudy with a high of 37 degrees at 3 p.m. We will be at the Winter Walk in Hudson between 5 and 8 p.m., and that will see temperatures dip under the freezing point. Watch for surface ice. Temperatures make it to 18 degrees by Sunday morning. Then, a cloudy day with a high of 34 at 2 p.m., but don't let that fool you. A dusting of snow falls in the afternoon. Then, another inch or so should fall overnight, coming to an end by sunup Monday morning. Rest of the day should be dry with a high of 23. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 25%. Plasma winds will be fast at 658 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently solar max standard with a level 3 noise floor. There are low chances of aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 165. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
The Public News Service Friday afternoon update. I'm Mike Clifford. The U.S. military conducted another deadly strike on a boat suspected of carrying illegal narcotics Thursday, the Pentagon said, killing 4 men in the Eastern Pacific. That as questions continue to mount over the legality of such attacks. That for The Guardian. And from the New York Times, after contentious debates and 3 failed attempts at a vote, a federal vaccine committee decided Friday to end the decades-long recommendation that all newborns be immunized at birth against hepatitis B, a highly infectious virus that leads to chronic liver disease in most infected children. Meantime, Governor Mike DeWine has vetoed Senate Bill 50, which would have allowed 14- and 15-year-olds in Ohio to work until 9 p.m. on school nights and would have put the state into direct conflict with federal child labor law.
Supporters of the veto say extending work hours for young teens, typically freshmen and sophomores, would have forced some students to choose between academics and night shifts. Ohio Education Association President Jeff Wensing, who is a high school math teacher, says the bill risked both safety and student success.
If you're a student that age, you're a freshman or sophomore, you need time to focus on your studies, to do your homework, to rest, to be a kid, basically, and unwind.
Farah Siddiqui reporting.
And advocates for Wisconsin seniors are speaking out about how federal policies are affecting the pressing issues in their communities. They're joining arms to work to address them. Older people are grappling with challenges from isolation and mental health to cost of living concerns and food and health insecurity.
Pastor of Trinity Church in Bloomfield, Jeremiah Gomez, says federal changes to social safety nets like Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security are also top of mind, especially in rural Wisconsin, where he says the three programs often come together to create a sense of security for older adults.
Because those things may be looking different, there's an anxiety there about what does that mean and how are people going to not just thrive, but how are they going to make it if there are changes to those things?
Gomez says community organizers are working on a senior agenda to push for policies that provide older Wisconsinites with agency and dignity in aging. I'm Judith Ruiz Branch reporting.
Next, Montgomery is marking the 70th anniversary of Rosa Parks' arrest for not giving up her seat on a city bus in defiance of Jim Crow segregation laws. Civil rights advocate Doris Crenshaw, who joined Parks as an NAACP youth leader, is helping lead intergenerational events this weekend.
70 years ago, Mrs. Parks was arrested. I think that's significant in that we want to demonstrate the impact that her arrest had on the world.
She says the anniversary offers a chance to reflect on the movement's legacy while preparing young people for the work ahead. This is Public News Service. Next to New York, where legislation in Albany would reinforce deadlines for the state to reimburse nonprofit organizations for the wide variety of public services that they provide.
The bill changes the state's contracting law to address nonprofits' challenges getting paid by the state for everything from social services to disaster recovery. The New York Council on Nonprofits finds the state owes $650 million to nonprofit groups, with more than half worried about how they'll operate without these funds. Dr. Sharon McLennan Weir with the Center for Independence of the Disabled New York says many nonprofits struggle as they wait for state dollars.
What happens a lot of the times is that these nonprofits are using whatever reserves they have. If their reserves run out, they're using lines of credit, and when that runs out, they are essentially out of business.
Research indicates nonprofit groups must often take out interest-bearing loans and then absorb the interest payments. McLennan Weir adds the government shutdown greatly affected groups like Sydney when federal money didn't trickle down to the states. The bill has been delivered to Governor Kathy Hochul. I'm Edwin J. Vieira.
We head next to Indiana, one of 26 states with a certified abandoned mine land program. Its purpose is to eliminate health, safety, and environmental hazards left behind by unpermitted mining.
Governor Mike Braun has praised Indiana as one of the nation's top coal-producing states and says the state is equipped to reclaim rare earth elements from coal and coal byproducts through rare earth recovery. Director of the Abandoned Mine Land Program, Kit Turpin, says sites mined before 1977 and left in an unreclaimed condition are eligible for federal funding.
On these abandoned mines, there's these coal-processing waste piles that are left behind. We call them gob piles. They have rare earth elements in them. And right now, they're sitting on the landscape, and in many cases, they're impacting the waterways of Indiana.
Gob piles are mixtures of coal, rock, and other debris that lack vegetation and can be environmentally hazardous due to acid mine drainage. I'm Terry D. reporting.
Finally, as some folks in Oregon get swamped with holiday chores, travel, and winter weather, some may not take the time to donate blood like they normally would.
You may not realize that it takes about 1,000 donors a day just to maintain a healthy blood supply for hospitals in the state. Isabel Anderson is with the American Red Cross Cascades region, covering Oregon and Southwest Washington. She says overall, blood supplies are stable for now, but the O-positive blood supply is dwindling.
That's really important because it's the most used blood type in hospitals. So we're really looking for people of all blood types, but especially if you have that O-positive blood type, we'd love you to come in and roll up your sleeve and donate.
She explains O positive is the blood type most needed because it's the most common, found in nearly 40% of the population. I'm Isabel Charlet.
This is Mike Clifford. Thank you for wrapping up your week with Public News Service. Member and listener supported. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, this is Lucy, your host of the WGXC First Friday Afternoon Show. I have a special episode for you guys today. I'm live in the Catskill studio at 393 Main Street. That's pretty usual. I'm always here. But today I'm sharing the space with an art show. That's kind of new for us. It's First Friday here in Catskill, as I mentioned, so the gallery is open to the public. You can come and watch me do my show. You can look at some art. And my guest today, I have a couple of different guests. That's what makes this episode a little special. My first guest is Stella Yoon, the executive director of Create Council, who is having their annual members show, their Small Works members show, up here at 393 Main Street. So come check it out. You can eat, shop, look at some art. So yeah, come down and check us out for First Friday. And then we're also going to have Betsy Jacks, who has some work in the show. And then we're also going to have a special guest named Lydia, who has some work at the Lightforms Art Center. So we got a jam-packed art show today. And before we continue, I wanted to point out, too, one of my former guests, David Garland, who I love. His band, Music for Furniture, will be performing at Lightforms Art Center tomorrow during Winter Walk. Winter Walk in Hudson, where Main Street is, or Warren Street is all decorated and stores are opened, and it's a really fun thing. That's 5 to 8 tomorrow, which is Winter Walk. But David's band, Music for Furniture, will be playing at Lightforms starting at 6. So check that out. So anyway, back to the show. Stella, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for inviting me.
So Stella, you and I go way back.
Yeah.
Way, way back. And just as a little disclaimer, I have some work here in the show. I am also a member of Create Council, which you are the executive director of. But yeah, we go way back to my craft fair days. Mm-hmm. You used to run a production called Hudson River Exchange that put on some of the most amazing events and craft fairs that I'd ever seen. I was first a guest, and then I became a vendor. I wanted to go through, and now you're executive director of Create. So I kind of wanted to go through your timeline because, like I said, I've been around, I've seen it. It's just such a great trajectory, and you've been such a exuberant champion for artists and artisans. So first of all, I want to talk to you about how did you end up here? How did you end up in the Hudson Valley?
It was 2011.
We're going way back, yeah. Which feels like yesterday, if I'm honest.
It does. Thanksgiving is my moving anniversary because I moved up Thanksgiving weekend 2011.
Oh, wow.
I was living in New York City. My friends and I had creative jobs in different industries. I was working in the photo industry and in retail, and my friends were in fashion, and we'd go to happy hour, and I think Walking Dead was a really big thing at the moment, and so we would kind of talk about how if the zombie apocalypse would happen, none of us knew how to grow our food or how would you fare,
yes.
Just happy hour chat.
Of course.
And
naturally.
We just started talking about how, farming is just really an honest way to live and how it's actually really helpful to know how to grow your food.
Wait, so you didn't know? Or was that farming was something that you had a...
Yeah, no. Nothing. I could not keep plants alive in my apartment. It was just a lot of just curiosity. And a friend and I ended up coming up to Hudson for a weekend to visit Hawthorne Valley Farm.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing a workshop about biodynamic farming, and this was in October in the Hudson Valley. So imagine
seems like
driving.
A weird time to do farming.
Well, they were doing a just a workshop.
Thing, yeah, they're so. Now we're done with the actual farming. Now right. What are we going to do? Now we'll teach other people so we don't have to do it next year.
And it's just, if you live here, it's kind of the most captivating time of year.
Yeah.
So we're driving through the hills around Ghent, and it's just really beautiful. We're here for the weekend, came to Hudson, drove down Warren Street, we parked the car and I got out of the car and I just said, I'm going to move here. And there's just something about the energy of what I was seeing in the store windows and just the architecture and
yeah, the architecture is insane.
Yeah, and so
whaling influences. I always love that. But yeah, it seems like completely. It's like so how does Nantucket,
yeah,
and Hudson, New York, have anything in common? Yeah. Oh wait, whaling.
Well, and yeah, just that whole. It harkens back to the history of commerce,
yes,
and the river, and so basically, I came back that week and found an apartment and packed up my things a month wow. later. So I
all
just
because of the apocalypse. Thank you, Walking Dead.
Yeah, thank you, Walking Dead and zombies. But yeah, I think I was interested. And then, you know, spending the weekend here and just kind of hanging out and kind of walking along and chit chatting with people, shop owners and stuff like that. Like, I just kind of appreciated the, you know, there are people that work with their hands, whether they're carpenters or farmers or even, you know, the shopkeepers. They're all kind of these small businesses. And, yeah, I kind of was interested in, had been living in New York City for 11 years at that point, went to art school, kind of was less interested in kind of the day-to-day, just even thinking about, like, the random people that are kind of in the same subway car as you. I mm-hmm. just kind of felt like it was just less interesting to me. And yeah, I was just kind of more curious about being in community with people that work with their hands and more kind of, I don't know, like a human scale kind of existence, yeah. I think. More neighborly, small town.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah. Yeah, I've grew up here. Yeah, I mean, that's one
yeah,
of the
so
reasons.
You're like, why did you end up here?
No, I just, to me, it's so random. Yeah, you know what I mean?
It is random for me, too.
Yeah, so to me, having grown up here, I'm like, how did you find us?
Yeah, yeah.
But it is a magical place that I didn't mm-hmm. realize, because I did leave for years, yeah. over a decade. Yeah, and never thought I'd come back. And you leave, and you're like, oh, that's a magical place. Mm-hmm. And you end mm-hmm. up back here. But one of the reasons is, as myself being an artist and somebody that works with my hands and everything, it, you know, that wasn't something that was going to fly in the city.
Yeah.
I was living in Boston, which is different, but still just as expensive. And it was not a, you know, I prefer the slower, I guess, more handmade, hands-on mm-hmm. life. And that, yeah. and that was it. And this is such a great place. But my husband, on the other hand, being a software engineer, needed a more city environment, mm-hmm. but also at the same time, what a magical place that you mm-hmm. can just hop on the thruway and go to Albany and have those jobs.
Yeah.
And then we can also live kind of in the middle of nowhere here and I yeah. can work with my hands.
Yeah. And there were a lot of artists. And
yeah.
I think that was kind of reflected in the types of businesses that were on Warren Street as mm-hmm. well. They're just, I think artists make the most interesting and best business owners. So.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. That's awesome. So you started Hudson River Exchange, which was, did it start as the craft fairs or mm-hmm. so it started as producing craft fair, organizing yeah. and producing craft fairs.
Started with an idea. And it wasn't even mine. there was a store on Warren Street called Content and, mm-hmm. It was owned by someone that grew up in the Berkshires, was kind of making their way back home. And she had handmade from friends locally, and then, you know, vintage things that she'd collected. And so I think it was a little different than most of the other kind of antique stores that were on Warren Street. And so it kind of drew people different, you know, kind of like curious people like myself. And
yeah, there was an evolution of Warren Street throughout my yes, life, especially. Yeah. Yeah. And at one point it was just antiques, which got a little boring.
Yeah.
But yeah. So once that kind of changed over to all this handmade stuff.
Yeah. So yeah, there was just, kind of people like myself, self-employed, creative, that would wander in and start chit-chatting with Jade, who owned the store. I guess somebody else that had was frequenting the store had just moved from another city and was like, oh, my friends there organized this craft market. Do you think something like that should happen here? And she started asking around to some of her regulars, like myself, and we all met, you know, got together one night, ordered pizza at the shop, and just started sharing ideas. Because we were all kind of, I think many of us were transplants or mm-hmm. kind of people that were returning to be closer to home if they grew up here. And it started as just an idea, people volunteering their time. And the first one took place July 19th, 2013 at the Hudson Riverfront Park. And, you know, we were like, oh, there are five or six of us organizing. It's like between us, we could probably find like 30 people. And I think at the event, there were 80 vendors.
Wow.
It was the hottest day that summer. But everyone was so excited because, you know, there were farmers markets and kind of like church craft market type things. Mm-hmm. But kind of the makers that were here didn't realize that there were other makers that were traveling to cities to do these larger craft shows. And so, and then, you know, store owners on Warren Street didn't realize there were so many local makers that they could be buying from. And everyone was just like really excited to meet each other. And people started asking us, when's the holiday market? So it just kind of had legs on its own.
Yeah.
And,
I think it was definitely something that it was a niche that needed to be filled that maybe people didn't even realize. Because I know that there are people that I met at the markets that I still talk to all these years later, artists and, you know, craftspeople and store owners and things like that. So much more came out of it as a community. It wasn't just a sole event.
So basically a couple of us kind of took it on and kept organizing markets. And then, you know, we were involved with Farm and Flea in the early days and doing the vendor curation for that. And so we did our annual summer market, and then Farm and Flea, of course, happened Thanksgiving weekend. So, and then I guess a couple years after we started, we had a little space on Warren Street so that we could have kind of year-round programming. Mm-hmm. And it kind of turned into this little retail incubator, gave people short-term opportunities to see what it's like to have a brick-and-mortar space because, like yourself, many people had online businesses or were attending craft fairs and vending over the weekend, did not have a permanent space. So we were curating kind of little pop-ups. If somebody wanted to take over the space, that was possible for short-term rental, things like that. So did that until about 2020.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, COVID.
Yeah. Well, we kind of knew that we were going to be, or I when you have a business, I think you say we a lot.
Yes.
But it was just me at that point. Yeah.
The collective we.
Yes, exactly.
The community.
Because we were essentially doing pop-ups in a permanent space, I was kind of being tired of a space manager.
Yeah.
And so the idea was...
it's just never-ending logistics, which is nobody's favorite.
Just, you know, you're having to respond to calls of, like, when something goes wrong and things like that. So... the idea was, well, it's essentially a pop-up in a permanent space. Why not pop up in other spaces?
Mm-hmm.
And then this theme will come back when we start talking about what I'm up to now. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a fantastic thing because I feel like that was kind of not the height, I don't know, but that was, excuse me, when... especially Etsy and a lot of people had online stores and things like that, which was fantastic, a fantastic outlet, but isolating. You know, I was home all the time with my kids making things and selling them, and it was great. It was great business. But yeah, isolating.
Yeah.
So it was Hudson River Exchange, I feel like, was the first group, and then later maybe Drop, Forge, and Tool, and, you know, other things kind of snowballed from that that allowed people who were in a similar... First of all, we were all in the same area, and we were in a similar market, but none of us knew each other. So it was a great way to network and just and be like, oh, we do the same thing. Look at that. You live next door. What?
Yeah, because you learn so much from each other. And I think creatives, you know, especially if you're entrepreneurial, you're figuring a lot of stuff out on your own.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're just kind of like, am I doing it right?
Well, and or everybody's reinventing the wheel every day. And right. It's like, no, if I can just ask you what website you use. Oh, yeah. Okay, great. Done.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because it was like, you know, some of this stuff, it makes me start feeling like I'm really old or sound really old. Just like talking about the technology. Yeah. So like, let's go back to 2013. Like Instagram has been around for, you know, 5-6 years. Mm-hmm. And the first workshop, professional development workshop that we ever hosted, was an Instagram workshop. And it was, it's like you, it posted chronologically.
Yeah.
And you couldn't edit your posts.
Yeah.
You were limited to one photo.
Yeah.
And it was a square.
Yeah.
And everyone was using really bad filters.
Yeah. So. Everybody spilled coffee on every one of their photos.
So, yeah, I mean, these tools, it was a really interesting time because I think that all this technology, e-commerce.
Or hashtags. Oh.
Oh, yeah.
I remember trying to explain what a hashtag was to somebody once and at the end, she just goes, no, I don't think so. And I'm like, yes, it is. I'm telling you.
Yeah, it's just there are all these new tools, too. Mm-hmm. And I think I don't know. There's so much more information online now.
Yeah.
But like at that point in time, it, you know, we were really like trying to learn from each other.
Yeah.
Seeing
it was a magical
out.
Wild, wild west
yeah.
kind of time. Now yeah. it seems daunting and you're just screaming into the void.
Yeah.
But at that time, yeah, I mean, the possibilities were crazy. Yeah. I love that in Instagram workshop.
Yeah, social media.
You take a picture and you post it. Turn yeah. a light on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that with Etsy. There were so many blog posts and things like that about mm-hmm. how to take a decent photo.
Mm-hmm.
You'd see somebody's photos and you're like, really? You thought that was?
Well, and now the cameras, your phone camera even does so much more for you.
Oh my
right?
God. I was shooting.
No,
yes. I was shooting my first listing photos for Etsy with film.
Mm-hmm.
Like I didn't even own a digital camera, which
yeah,
is nuts.
That is nuts.
Yeah. And for Christmas, my husband got me a little like Fuji point
like,
and shoot.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, I don't have to develop the film now.
He had to plug it in.
Yeah. And it's
and
like.
And download the photos off the card.
I'm also not great at technology.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't like to learn new things. Anyway, we could talk forever. It's already 5:30. But so fast forward.
Mm-hmm.
So 2020, was that the turning point?
Well, for me personally, yeah, because
yeah.
Hudson River Exchange was a business that I was running and
in-person business.
Yeah, around retail. And I just was starting to shift my personal priorities. And I guess, how long have I been at Create? I think a couple years now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I was just kind of shifting into more freelance work and also kind of interested in finding a job, like a day job.
Yeah.
And my friend was the interim director of Create at the time and told me about the job. And, like, he had been familiar with kind of, I'm a creative, I work with makers, you know, and community building. This might be interesting to you, and I thought it was really interesting, especially during the pandemic. I started really thinking a lot about how money flows,
mm-hmm.
and because you know, over the 10 years, I like worked with a lot of small businesses, and you know, oftentimes it was kind of like, oh, you kind of need to make a decision, like, are you making an investment into your business? Like, it all came down to cash flow and,
yeah.
like, access to capital.
Yep.
And what interested me about, I didn't know what an arts council did until
mm-hmm.
I was starting to look into this job. And an arts council is essentially a grant administering organization.
Mm-hmm.
So it really aligned with my personal interests in kind of how money flows, how to share resources or make resources accessible to especially creative people.
Who aren't necessarily the best at filling paperwork out.
Right. And, you know, and like artists are so, can kind of literally make something out of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you give them money, you unlock so much more than just paying for materials.
Yes.
And, yeah, I just, like, really believe in artists and creativity. And so, I was like, oh, we get to do this as a job? That sounds great.
Yeah.
So that's how I got involved with CREATE.
Yeah, that's awesome. I when I had heard that you were taking over as the executive director, I was like, oh my gosh, that's perfect. Yeah, again, full disclosure, I received a grant from CREATE Council mm-hmm. last year for a body of work that I did. And yeah, you're right. I mean, it's, you know, I can always figure out how to make the work no matter what, do what you can with what you have. But yeah, it's a stressor that is taken away when you know that you have the ability to pay mm-hmm. for those materials. Mm-hmm. Because the thing about art that's so strange is that you have to make the work. You have to have materials and time mm-hmm. and whatever and space to make the work. And nobody asked you to make it. Mm-hmm. And once it's done and paid for, you're like, I hope someone would like to buy mm-hmm. it. I hope they'd like to show it. You don't know. So having that, having the ability to apply for something like that, it allows you space mentally than to just focus on the work.
Yeah.
And then to have it be in a rural area. So let's talk a little bit about what CREATE does. It's a county, there's three counties yes. that it covers, correct?
Green, Columbia, and Schoharie counties.
Okay. And you help facilitate grants to people in those counties.
Right. We work with the New York State Arts Council. Mm-hmm. We're a partner for their statewide community re-grant program, SER. And through that program, we administer grants to the three counties. And I think this year we'll be distributing $208,000 wow. in 2026 across the three counties. That's to individual artists, arts and cultural organizations, Yeah, and then we also do a couple county-based programs, too. Mm-hmm. So those are specific to residents in Columbia County, Greene County, or organizations, yeah, that are based specifically. So as an arts council, we are this really interesting kind of, like, non-governmental agency that mm-hmm. works with government.
Mm-hmm.
And on their behalf, we're the kind of partner that takes the public funds that are, you know, for re-granting, and it goes back into the community. We recruit local people in the community for panels that review the applications. So essentially, people in the community are creating the artwork or the programs. It's being administered or hosted by local organizations and venues. These are all being selected by your peers and yeah. community members.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really great to have a local resource that you can tap into. And because we don't make as CREATE, we administer the process. We're not determining who gets the specific funds. We can support people through that process.
Yes, so. Which is insanely helpful. As I remember, I was like, wait, what is this?
Yeah, we do.
Spreadsheets?
Right, like we do office hours. We mm-hmm. can review materials. Oftentimes, you get your first, like people get their first grant through CREATE Council.
Yeah, I did. I had never done it before. It was horrifying.
and you did it once, you can do it. The next time you do it, it's so much easier.
Yes, but that everything is terrifying the first time.
Of course.
And I just looked at that spreadsheet and had to Google a bunch of the words, and I was like, I don't know. But yeah, it was such a helpful thing. So now it's not so daunting
yeah.
in other areas.
Yeah.
Then also the state of New York is a very weird place, having New York City here.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, sometimes it does feel like a daunting situation when you're applying for something statewide
yeah.
where you're like, who's little old me in Catskill, mm-hmm. New York, and I'm going up against people in New York City.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's an incredible thing as well.
Yeah. No, and this is a pool of people that are local.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And then so recently
mm-hmm. –
As I mentioned earlier in the show, we're currently doing our show from the Catskill studio, the WGXC Catskill studio, which is also sharing space with the CREATE members show. So recently, how long were you in the building? You were in
since
a different
the 80s.
Since the 80s.
Yes.
So, yes, that when I think of the CREATE Council, which was the Greene County Council of the Arts mm-hmm. originally,
Established in 76.
Oh my goodness.
We're 50, we're turning 50 years
old. Wow.
Yeah.
And you were in that building though since
the
80s.
No, it was actually had different in Athens first, I think, and then in Catskill. And then also there was gallery space on the mountaintop.
Oh.
And so, yeah. We've been around.
Been around. But yeah, so you're no longer in mm-hmm. the Main Street space mm-hmm. where you've been for since the 80s. Mm-hmm. And so what's the future like? So right now we're having the members show here, mm-hmm. this little pop-up.
Yep.
Do you have, is there a different place for the offices? What's yep. the future hold?
Yeah, so, really big decision and bittersweet to, because I know that 398 Main Street meant a lot to people over the many decades.
Yes.
As a gallery, as a community space, a place for learning and
well, it just having the gallery was such a huge. I mean, when mm-hmm. I first moved here, it was the first. I went to art school, mm-hmm. but then I was working for magazines and things like that. And then once I made the decision I've always made art. Mm-hmm. You can't stop. Mm-hmm. But once I made the decision to start showing again mm-hmm. and things like that, it was my first stop. Mm-hmm. So I put work in every single show that mm-hmm. I could and sold some. Mm-hmm. I think the first thing I ever sold was through, it was Green County Council of the Arts, like mm-hmm. I said. There was a fashion show
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That... where was it? It was up the street. It wasn't in that space.
Mm-hmm.
And I hung a piece. I was asked to put a piece mm-hmm. in it. And yeah, and somebody bought it. And mm-hmm. I was like, wait, what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was such an awesome thing to have here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I realized, it's a gallery, but it's really a community space.
Yeah.
Because it's different than a commercial gallery.
Yes.
It's just accessible in kind of a different way.
Yeah.
So,
and so many different people.
Yeah.
I mean, so many different artists involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it was just such an uplifting, optimistic thing when you feel like you're outside of the art world.
Mm-hmm.
And then to be able to be like, oh, no, I'm showing, I'm participating, mm-hmm. I'm meeting people, I'm networking,
mm-hmm.
And actually selling things.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Such a cool, I have so many good memories of.
Oh, great.
It's weird to call it Create Council anyway, but
yeah.
It's easier
yeah.
than Green County Council of the Arts.
Yeah. Well, it's Create Council on the Arts.
Create Council on the Arts.
Technically. But yeah, so, it was a decision made really because of our, refocusing on mission, which is, we're a service organization
mm-hmm.
and just now we've evolved to serve three counties. When you do have a physical space, you're oftentimes spending a lot of energy bringing them to that space.
Yes.
And we realized we could be doing more by being out in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a great example. Our member 20 by 20 show is at this space. Obviously, it's used as the studio, Catskill studio for the radio shows, and some administrative work happens here. But there are these walls, and
yeah.
We're activating the space in a different way and able to also highlight and introduce we're doing a little bit of cross-promotion between Create's audience and WGXCs that may not know about each other,
mm-hmm.
Both local organizations doing very interesting things. And we want to be doing more of this type of collaborative pop-up programming
yeah,
across
I love
their
that.
Counties. Yeah.
Because that's the thing I mentioned earlier, that fashion show was
mm-hmm.
a very similar,
mm-hmm.
There was art on the walls,
mm-hmm.
there was, people walking the runway. It was, it was such a cool event
mm-hmm.
To have, to be part of around
yeah.
here, again, around here. Yeah, that's awesome. So, well, thank you. I think we have to, it's 5:38 and we have some other guests. So Stella, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thanks, Lucy. I feel like we've kind of paralleled journeys of like craft world to art world, art world to craft world. So, yeah.
We started in the same place and now we're evolving and we're back together.
Always together.
So if people want more information though about Create, mm-hmm. because there's memberships, there's events, there's everything, mm-hmm. where shall they go?
Createcouncil.org and Instagram and Facebook are active. Find us there.
Yeah, and again, if you are interested in membership, the shows, the member shows, the events, everything, it's totally worth it. So we're going to call up to the mic Miss Betsy Jacks, who actually is one of the artists in the show. Betsy's going to walk up here and put the headphones on.
Okay.
Thank you so much for joining me in this eclectic radio situation.
Pleasure.
Betsy, also, I should just have you on the show anyway. You should get your own hour because you have an art background here in Catskill that we could talk about for a long time. But you're here as an artist today.
That's right.
So why don't you tell us where your work is here up on the walls?
Yep, over on the left wall.
And you are a painter.
Yes.
Why don't you give us a little overview?
Well, as you were alluding to, I was the executive director of the Thomas Cole Historic Site for 21 years.
Mm-hmm.
I was a painter before that, mm-hmm. during that, to a lesser degree.
Again, as I mentioned before, we don't ever stop, do we?
Right.
No matter what we're doing.
Yep. Although it definitely took a back burner because the Thomas Cole Site became my full-time creative, mm-hmm. endeavor. But now I'm painting full-time as of January 1st.
Awesome.
So I am loving it. I'm feeling very lucky. And yes, there's a piece here in the show at this Create Gallery pop-up, which I'm thrilled about. And actually, I'm in a show right across the street at City It.
Oh!
They're having a show that opens today.
Oh.
I can't know if there's like maybe 8 artists.
Oh,
I'm
nice.
Not sure the exact number. Don't quote me on that. But yes. So a group of my paintings are there too.
Awesome. And your work, you mentioned the Thomas Cole House, your work is very much influenced by nature and, mm-hmm. just like our great Thomas Cole.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it today. You're supposed to sum up your work in a sentence
impossible.
Right? So at least for your Instagram bio.
Yes.
But so I was thinking about it today, and a lot of it seems to be about the relationship between humans and nature,
mm-hmm.
and humans and non-human natural forms. But in one word, I've been doing trees.
Yes.
And people turning into trees and other, like the paintings that are now across the street at City It have human forms kind of hidden in these little plants.
Oh.
So it's a new set of work that I just put up and no one's seen. So
nice.
Yeah. There's hidden things in there. So you have to check them out closely to see.
So you mentioned you were an artist before you worked at the Thomas Cole House.
Yes.
But how much did working there influence? Were you working in similar veins before that? Or do you think that being immersed in that, if anybody doesn't mm-hmm. know, I mean, Thomas Cole was kind of the father of, you know, the Hudson River School and, you know, very dramatic, romantic style landscapes. So was being immersed in that for so long, did that influence you, or was that already there? Was that a reason
both.
You ended up working there?
Yeah, so the reason that I ended up working there is because it did resonate so strongly with me. I had painted landscapes throughout my life, but more than that, I was really, and still am, really enamored with that period of American history.
Oh, yeah.
The American literature from that period, Emerson and Thoreau, just hit me like an anvil, like mm-hmm. just when I first read it. And so I've just, the architecture from that period, everything, love it. Love studying it because so much of the conflict and, you know, just the, I don't know, self-identity as a country, we have this sort of identity crisis. It stems from the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
And all the conflicts were set up then between preservation and development, between, you know, just, you know, if you look back, they were discussing the same problems then as we are now. We just haven't evolved very far. So at any rate, I find it fascinating. And then Thomas Cole in particular, he really anthropomorphized his trees. His trees are so human-like, and I think that they're the main characters of his paintings. The figures are kind of secondary. The trees are really carrying the narrative, and his narrative is often, hey, we need to pay attention to nature. It's not going to take care of itself. It's really up to us, and it's not unlimited, and it's important. So I really... I like that message as well. So my paintings, I guess, deal with all of those issues in addition to the fact that I'm a woman living in the 21st century. And so all of that comes into it as well.
No, that's awesome. he definitely took on a man versus nature situation that has always captivated me as well. And then right down to Frederick Church as well. Obsessed. Grown up here,
yeah.
Obsessed.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, I worked at Alana for a while, actually. Nice. Just one season.
What was as a
tour guide?
That's so great.
Hi, my name is Lucy. Welcome to Alana.
Love it. Yeah.
If you'll have your tickets out, I'll take them as we enter the East Parlor.
That sounds like it really stuck.
Oh, it did. It was my formative, like my first job after high school.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you, Betsy, so much. We're running out of time, and we have one more guest.
Great.
Thanks
for doing this.
Yeah, and you should come back on another time. I would absolutely love to talk to you for an hour about Thomas Cole.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Bye for now.
And now we're going to have, we're going to have Lydia Rubio joining us. Lydia has... she has some work at the Light Forms Art Center, which is actually in Hudson, and that is up through Sunday. Sunday. What is Sunday? The 7th. Light Forms will be, open through the weekend. Tomorrow is Winter Walk in Hudson, as I said, but they will be also, Light Forms will be open during the day as well, and you can see Lydia's work. Lydia Rubio, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me.
So you have a show right now up at Light Forms,
right?
Of your paintings,
right?
Huge paintings, I'm told. Monumental.
You're told.
I haven't made it over there, but I will on Sunday.
Well, these paintings, the ones that you're referring to. The show is called Talisman, and those are the paintings in the back of the gallery that form a space. The paintings were, they're about the four elements, and in the center of the space there is a talisman that is a protective talisman that comes from a very old source of talismans. These paintings were done specifically in the year 2000. And then there are the four elements: fire, water, air. And they're 8 feet by 16.
Wow!
So they really they're acrylic paintings, and they're not stretched, so they hang like tapestry.
Creating an immersive environment.
Exactly. And the reason why they're included is because the show takes, the whole show is taking, it's like a retrospective of 30 years of work.
Oh, wow.
And also you have works that are 1995, for example, and others that are 2014, and then very recent works that are 1 or 2 years old.
Nice.
It is a very large space. It is one of the largest spaces that I've seen in Hudson or the area.
Yeah.
So when I saw the space, I said, this is perfect for these large paintings that I have. But of course, it took me 2 years after one of the curators, Zoe Derner, came to my studio that this thing happened now. The rest of the paintings are also related to the idea of the elements. So even though they may be, I don't know, 30 years old or whatever, they have the same subject that is, it's like a thread that is woven throughout the show.
Mm-hmm.
And well, you know, there are many ways that I have expressed this subject, so it's interesting to see the different types of forms that this has taken in different paintings, from very sort of surreal ones, the ones of the boats of the elements, to the acrylic paintings that are very graphic and strong in terms of monochromatic, and to the maps, for example. I have two maps in the show that are a part of what I do. I do these maps or books to sometimes to organize or even express or even, you know, show the process that I follow to make a series of works.
Mm-hmm.
So the maps are maps of my life or my path through life, where I mark the geometry of my places where I've lived, or maps, yes, that comment upon my life and the works at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So what do you work in different mediums then? Because the larger ones are acrylic.
Yeah.
And then you make these maps. Are they literal maps? Like they're drawn as actual, like they look like actual maps or yes. Like illustrations?
Yes, yes. Well, you know, the thing is that these maps are the map of pathways, is like 7 feet high.
Wow.
It's a canvas. It's drawn in acrylic and charcoal.
Oh, okay.
And it's such, it's like a painting, you know, more like a large drawing or mm-hmm. something like that. And the other media that I use is the latest paintings are done with powder pigments and resins.
Oh, okay.
So it's not, a lot of the works are there. There are powder pigment and resins made by me mm-hmm. and different, and then also there are oils, very elaborate oils. And
wow.
But I usually do not work in acrylic.
This, oh, okay.
This was done like that because it was I had to complete this very fast. And it was you know, you couldn't have done it in oil.
No. It would have sat there for a while.
Right. So the show, by the way, closes Sunday at mm-hmm. 5, but tomorrow, Saturday, there will be a workshop that I'm offering. And the workshop is about sort of the connections of forms. It's a collage. A workshop where we're going to play with these geometric forms on a rectangle, and that the idea is to discuss the inner energies of the rectangle and what, you know, the energies of one particular form, the expression of one particular form, and then it's applicable to any. It's like a discussion on composition and within drawing and painting, no?
Yeah. So are you living in this area now? You're from Cuba originally?
Yes,
is it?
Yes.
When did you come here? How long have you been here?
In this area?
Yes.
I've been since 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And I have shown a fair amount of times in Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
So I have shown my work in different venues. And so
people walking by, friends of my daughter.
That's great that you're here in the window, right?
I know, I love it.
You're connecting the town with your activity.
They can see how it's made.
So anyway, the workshop is going to be 2 hours, and it's tomorrow morning from 11 to 1.
And are there still spaces available? Or I saw
yes.
Oh, okay.
So we're trying to promote, you know, it's going to be that kind of sort of talking about form,
mm-hmm.
which is something that is not really sometimes not done. You know, it's like it's a discussion on perception and form and making these collages. I mean, we're going to be working on actual pieces that
mm-hmm.
will be finished.
So if you guys, I just looked this up on my laptop quick. If you want information, more information about Lydia's workshop tomorrow, you actually can check out Light Forms, Forms with an S, artcenter.com. And that workshop is called Forms in Space with Lydia Rubio. That's tomorrow, December 6th, Saturday, December 6th. It starts at 11 to 1. It says registration required, but maybe you can just call the gallery in the morning and get some information about that. So again, that's lightformsartcenter.com if you're interested in that workshop. So you're living around here, working around here, but have been working for quite some time. So what drew you to this area?
Well, look, I was here before, not in Hudson, but mm-hmm. I was in New York in mm-hmm. the 70s and 80s, okay? And after that stay there, I was there for, you know, a total of between Cambridge and New York, like 15 years, no?
Mm-hmm.
And I went down south to Miami, where I had never lived before, even though I left Cuba, you know, very early in my life. The family moved to Puerto Rico, so, you know, I grew up in Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I studied in Northern Florida, but never in Miami. So I established a practice there for some years, like I would say almost 20 years. And after that, or in the sort of a break from that, I went to Bogota, Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed there for 4 years. And then I came back to Miami, and after somewhat of a divorce, then I came to Hudson because I had a friend here that was involved in the arts, and she said, oh, you're going to love this. And I came to visit, and I did love it, mm-hmm. and I moved. And since then, the place has grown so much in terms of the arts.
Yes.
So many artists that have moved, mm-hmm. So it's really amazing. It's like a very nice group of people, very active, very wonderful, trying to do many things, and
yes,
it's just very inspiring in a sense. No,
it is. Yeah, it's absolutely inspiring. I say that all the time. Having grown up, you know, as an artist, growing up here in the 80s and 90s. There wasn't, and there were people, but there you didn't know them. There weren't art galleries. There were a couple, but there wasn't that much going on if you were an artist. So that's why growing up, I could not wait to leave the
right.
area.
Oh, right.
But the minute I did and realized how magical it was, I obviously came back. I missed it. I love being here, the seasons, the environment, everything like that. And so now I'm just so happy that we have access to everything that we have access to. And there's so many other artists like yourself and, you know, so many artists that are inspiring. And I can bring my children to performances and concerts and this, that, and the other. It's so wonderful.
Right. Also, you know, talking about concerts, there will be a concert tomorrow at Lightforms.
Yes, we mentioned that at the top of the hour.
Okay.
Music for Furniture, who David Garland, who he also had a show at Light Forms, and I interviewed him for that. It's his band, yeah. That's during Winter Walk. I believe it starts at 6.
6 o'clock,
yes.
Yeah, right.
So check that out. That's tomorrow. So you have your workshop at 11, and then David has a concert at 6, and that's all at Light Forms Art Center in Hudson, which is on Columbia Street. In Hudson.
And I will be there at the gallery through the afternoon,
mm-hmm.
and also Sunday afternoon. So if anybody wants to visit and talk to me about the work, well, that would be, you know, a way to maybe entertain me.
Yeah. Because if there's something artists, there's nothing artists love more than talking about their work. So
No, but also let me say that sitting there without any
oh my gosh I know
any person, you know, it's a traumatic experience. Yes. You want people to come in and entertain you.
Yeah. Or you'll have to go on the street and find people. come in Yes, yeah, so please go hang out with Lydia tomorrow at Lifeforms. Don't make her bored. She'll have to play a game on her phone otherwise. That's so awesome. Well, thank you so much, Lydia, for stopping by. I feel like we would have so much to talk about. And I'll stop and see you Sunday.
I will
be there Sunday.
Wonderful. I look forward to the crowds that are going to go.
Oh
Saturday.
My! You will not see me Saturday during Winter Walk because I don't even know where you park. Parking gives me anxiety.
Thank you.
But yeah, thank you so much for being here. It was lovely to meet you. And again, that's Lydia Rubio, and she has work at Lightforms Art Center in Hudson, but that closes on Sunday, so go see it. I guess that's it for us. We've got about 30 seconds here. I will actually have a special episode next Friday. I'm usually just the first Friday of the month, but I will have a special episode next Friday from 5 to 6 again,